Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. It's the home stretch of summer vacation for many Americans, and the last week of August handed Republicans a rough ride. Gonzalez turned in his badge and thanked his most loyal supporter.
I am profoundly grateful to President Bush for his friendship and for the many opportunities he has given me to serve.
Idaho Senator Larry Craig issued this denial.
I am not gay. I never have been gay.
And Bush tried looking on the bright side 2 years after the devastation of Katrina.
This town's coming back. This town is better today than it was yesterday, and it's going to be better tomorrow than it was today.
Joining me now from Washington is Liz Mayer, a political blogger and columnist for The New York Sun. Liz, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Good to be with you.
Also joining us from Des Moines, Iowa, is David Yepsen, chief political correspondent for the Des Moines Register. David, welcome to you.
It's good to be with you.
And with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point news analyst Jack Beattie, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly magazine. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Jane, Liz, and David.
David Yepsen, let me start with you. A big week for Republicans between Senator Larry Craig's problems and Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez stepping down. What's your take?
Well, I think just when things are bad for Republicans, they seem to get worse. The situation with Senator Craig is very demoralizing inside the party. Social conservatives are furious about this. It really makes him look like a hypocrite. There seems to be very little support for him among his colleagues. And, you know, this is the sort of thing that you hear about in jokes over the water cooler. And when that happens to a politician, I think they're finished. And so I think it's very bad news for Republicans because I think it hurts them with their social conservative base.
You speak of the lack of support from Craig's colleagues. Here's an interview on Wednesday on CNN. Senator John McCain showed how quickly Republicans are pulling away from their colleague Larry Craig.
I believe that he pled guilty and he had the opportunity to plead innocent. So I think he should resign.
Liz Mayer, can he survive this?
Honestly, I don't think so. And from what I'm hearing this morning, it sounds as though he may very well announce that he's resigned by the end of the day. So we will have to see. But my suspicion is that if he hasn't resigned by the end of today, he will in a few weeks, within a few weeks. And then we'll be looking at what happens with replacing him and the Senate race next year.
And what do you think about that, Jack, replacing Senator Craig in the Senate race upcoming?
I'm sure they will do that. And, you know, some people have pointed to the differentiating responses here, Republicans, to the scandal surrounding Senator David Vitter of Louisiana, who admitted to consorting with prostitutes. Of course, he hasn't pled guilty in any formal way, but there was no cry for him to resign. And, of course, the one obvious reason is that Idaho has a Republican governor who will appoint a Republican to replace Craig as a candidate, and Louisiana still has a Democratic governor. And so it wouldn't do to have David Vitter resign.
All right. From Senator Larry Craig to Alberto Gonzalez, the Justice Department's inspector this week, indicated that he is investigating whether former Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez gave false statements or misleading testimony to Congress, including whether he lied under oath about warrantless surveillance and the firings of those 9 U.S. attorneys. David Yepsen, perhaps we haven't heard the last of Alberto Gonzalez?
I don't think so. I think the whole question of perjury or not perjury, that's something law enforcement people take pretty seriously, and it's unfortunate for the department because just about the time that I think the administration wanted to sort of move on and turn the page, Congress has already signaled that it intends to keep pursuing this, and now the department itself. So you're right. I don't think we've heard the last of this.
President Bush, standing on the airport tarmac on Monday in Waco, Texas, says Gonzalez was simply a victim of politics.
It's sad that we live in a time when a talented and honorable person like Alberto Gonzalez is impeding from doing important work because his good name was dragged through the mud for political reasons.
Liz Mayer, agree or disagree? This was about politics.
Well, I mean, I think certainly a lot of what motivated Democrats in Congress to start going after Gonzalez was politics. But, you know, honestly, this is a guy who really hasn't done himself any favors. You know, and he's gone and testified in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee. He's ended up with a lot of Republicans coming out and saying this just isn't credible. He's not doing a good job. It would be better for everybody if he went. You know, I think the president is definitely overshooting here, and I think most people feel that it was just as well for Gonzalez to go. Certainly, if you look around the right-wing blogosphere, most bloggers definitely feel that it was just as well that he went and aren't particularly happy to see him go. So I think the president's out of step with his own party on this one, frankly.
Here's Senator Patrick Leahy, who chairs the Judiciary Committee. He held a press conference on Monday in Vermont, his home state, denouncing efforts to politicize the Justice Department.
The Attorney General's resignation reinforces what Congress and the American people already knew. No Justice Department should be allowed to become a political arm of the White House.
Jack Beatty, a big wake at the White House for Gonzalez.
It is. And, you know, people have been treating this as if, well, you know, they've been treating the Gonzalez resignation along with the Robe resignation as, well, you know, the president now has turned the page. We've got rid of two polarizing figures, and now we can expect a more, you know, more amity in relations with Congress. That seems to me exceedingly unlikely. There was a new poll out this week from some political scientists demonstrating that, in a point of fact, Mr. Bush is the single most polarizing president since the polling has been done. That is to say, he gets fewer Democratic votes, or he gets a lower level of support from Democrats than almost any Republican president. Ronald Reagan, even at his low point, got 25% support from Democrats. Bush is lucky to get 10%. So you've got this enormous span of polarization. 60 to 70% of Republicans support him, barely 10% of Democrats. That's the kind of polarization that his policies have led to, and it's very unlikely that he's going to change course from that, especially with the confrontation over Iraq coming up.
David Yepsen, Jack Beatty speaks of this polarization. What are you seeing in important places like Iowa?
Well, I think Jack's right. The country is very polarized. Here in the state of Iowa, this is one of only three states that in the election of 2004 changed how it voted from the election of 2000. So it is a real battleground state. And I can tell you that Republicans here are very dispirited. I spend a lot of time these days covering these caucus campaigns. You go to Democratic events, the crowds are large, they're enthusiastic. You go to Republican events, the crowds are much smaller, and there's not as much enthusiasm. I think there's a real morale problem that's now set up inside the Republican Party, and I think it bodes ill for their chances in November of 2008. I mean, we're starting the high school football season in America, and what did your high school football coach always tell you? You're not going to win if you don't think you can win. And I think Republicans all over the country are in a very down mood, and I think that could almost become a self-fulfilling prophecy going into November 2008.
Speaking of Democratic politics, David Yepsen, national polls this week show a widening lead for Hillary Clinton for the 2008 Democratic nomination. But in Iowa, where you are, this new Time magazine poll was interesting, which showed John Edwards leading the pack among likely Democratic caucus goers. Good news for Edwards? And does he need to do well in Iowa to stay in this race?
Yes, John Edwards has to win Iowa. His people have said as much. And he's put almost much of his campaign here in the state. He's pulled people out of Nevada to work in Iowa. His lead in Iowa is 5 points. The margin of error in the poll is 5 points. We've been in a situation in this state and the Democratic side for several weeks now in which Hillary Clinton, John Edwards, and Barack Obama are statistically tied for first place. Democrats, activist Democrats, are struggling with this decision. They've also seen Governor Bill Richardson come up. He's now in a nice fourth place position in the polls, is doing quite well here. Chris Dodd picked up the firefighters' endorsement yesterday. That's an important endorsement. They put John Kerry over the top here in this state. And Joe Biden is getting a lot of interest from Democrats because of his stance on the Iraq War and his credibility on that issue. So it is a very intense race here, and it is very close, and I wouldn't want to make any predictions right now.
Speaking of presidential campaign, Liz Mayer, it's raining candidates in Florida, even with the flap between the state and the national political parties over this early presidential primary, this January 29th primary. Seems candidates still going to pay a lot of attention to Florida, right?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, at the end of the day, the DNC Rules Committee has made the decision to go ahead and yank Florida's delegates and say that they don't get to have a say in the actual nominating process. And the RNC has threatened to yank half of the Republican delegates as well. And, you know, this is all as a result of Florida moving its primary up. But I think at the end of the day, regardless of the delegate situation, the fact of the matter is Florida is the first big state that we're going to see really, at least as it stands at the moment, really having a say in the nominating process. And to be honest, it's one of the more diverse states in the country. So, you know, I did an interview with Charlie Crist back, I think it was in July, and one of the points that he made is because of the diversity of the state and the size of the state, it's a really good benchmark for testing who can actually win nationwide. And I think for that reason, there's no way that candidates are going to be ignoring it, and there's no way that political observers are going to be ignoring it either.
Wednesday marked the second anniversary of Hurricane Katrina, and in a speech at Georgia Southwestern State University, presidential candidate John Edwards outlined his plan to help New Orleans get back on its feet.
I will have a high-level person in the White House who reports to me every day on what they did in New Orleans yesterday. You know, plans are fine. I want to know what they did yesterday.
And during an interview on Monday on ABC's Good Morning America, Barack Obama talked about how he would rejuvenate New Orleans.
We also have to rebuild the wetlands and the marshes around the coast. We've got to rebuild our infrastructure. And so I want the federal government to focus on building police forces here. President Bill Clinton had a cops program that put 100,000 new police on the streets. We think we should at least have a focused program right here in New Orleans.
David Yepsen, New Orleans seems to be a big political issue for these presidential candidates.
Well, it is, especially for the Democrats. I mean, it was clearly, it may be the point at which, as we look back, we really mark the beginning of the end of the Bush administration. I don't think the president has really recovered from the political damage he suffered there. And as these stories continue to come out about problems in New Orleans, it just is bad news for Bush and for Republicans, and Democrats are pouncing on it. You know, and I think it's part of the sort of a great national funk that we're in. Americans expect their government to work, and it didn't in Katrina. Mm-hmm. We're having trouble seeing getting things to work in Iraq. You know, Congress has these great moral clouds over it. The congressional poll numbers are worse than the president's. And so to me, this is all just part and parcel of a great national gray mood, if you will, that we have toward our government.
What do you think, Liz Mayer, about this national gray mood David Yepsen refers to?
Well, I think on one level that's correct, but one of the things that I find interesting is that there has been some polling that's come out recently sort of testing how confident people are about government and whether they're very government skeptical or not. And at the moment, actually, ironically, in my opinion, people seem to be a lot less government skeptical than they have been in the past. And I find that quite incredible that when you have things like Katrina, when you have the ethics scandals in Congress, when you have what looks like mismanagement of the Iraq War, that people's response to that would actually be, let's have more government, let's have better government, rather than saying, like, there's something actually fundamentally wrong with the way the government functions.
Jack Beattie, I want to turn to you on the Iraq point, because there were a couple of stories related to Iraq that caught your eye this week.
Well, there have been a series of leaks and reports ahead of General Petraeus's September 11th testimony. Today, the New York Times is out with a report, the Jones Report, named after Marine General James Jones, on the Iraqi National Police. They call it a cesspool of corruption infiltrated by Shiite militias, and it suggests that the police should be disbanded and start over. This follows on a leak yesterday from the GAO report in the Washington Post that found that the Iraq government has made progress, or has fulfilled, rather, only 3 of 18 political goals and military goals set by Congress for it, including it has yet to provide the 3 trained and ready Iraq brigades to support the Baghdad operations. Then there was a report. There's a report in The Nation, this time a leak from the embassy in Baghdad, a 70-page report about corruption throughout the various ministries of Iraq, including the Ministry of Trade, where they find that out of 196 corruption complaints involving that ministry, only 8 have made it to court and only one person has been convicted. So on and on, we're getting these reports from leaks, clearly, people who want to get their story out before the White House spin machine.
Well, how does that set the stage, Jack, for General Petraeus's report coming in a couple of weeks?
Well, I think it gives a lot of headwind for him. I mean, these reports are in varying degrees devastating. And then there's the issue of the casualties. This is going to be central. The Associated Press, in its calculations, finds that the number of war-related deaths has doubled this year over last year, that there are more than 1,000 more people have been killed this year than last year, that the number of displaced Iraqis has more than doubled since the beginning of this year. And, of course, as other reports have found, whereas last year the average loss up to this point was 55 American troops per month, this time it's 62. So all of these numbers on the ground are as bad as the political numbers documented in these reports.
Talking about Iraq, the issue of Iran also came up this week. President Bush, speaking to the National Convention of the American Legion in Reno, Nevada, takes aim at Iran.
Iran's actions threaten the security of nations everywhere. And that is why the United States is rallying friends and allies around the world to isolate the regime, to impose economic sanctions. We will confront this danger before it is too late.
David Yepsen, how is the issue of Iran playing in your home state of Iowa and the problems, the confrontations that may be upcoming there?
Well, I think when Democrats hear President Bush talk that way, they get spooked. I mean, there's a real fear among a lot of Democrats that George Bush may, in fact, try some sort of military solution there. Now, they've said they aren't, but that option is still on the table. Here people are just tired of this war, and I think the Petraeus report may enable, everybody will pick and choose out of that report to find things that buttress their own opinions, but it may, in fact, give some Republicans a little cover to move toward a more dovish position, if you will, of trying to find a quick way to get out. Iran is part of that, and I think the country is tired of anything that smacks of U.S. adventurism. It didn't work in Iraq, and people, the casualty rates in rural America have been high. I mean, disproportionate numbers of casualties in this war have come from rural parts of the country. This war has touched a lot of people here in Iowa and all over rural America. And I think there's a limit to how much people are willing to tolerate. I've seen polling that shows even Republican activists now think we ought to get out of Iraq. And so when you hear this talk about Iran, people just sort of sigh and say, oh, my gosh, does this never end?
Liz Mayer, what's your take on President Bush's tough talk on Iran?
Well, I think I have to agree with David. Generally, I think that people in the country generally are quite weary of being at war. I don't think that they are enthusiastic about the idea of getting involved in any sort of conflict with Iran or taking any military action against Iran. And I frankly think even though the president may have a point when he talks about the threat coming from Iran, he just has no credibility to discuss the topic anymore. And, as David said, obviously when you're looking at Democrats and also independents, you are seeing a lot of people just going, oh, God, I don't even want to consider this. And when you look within Republican Party sort of figures, I think you're starting to see a lot of people also getting very, very hesitant about allowing the president too much leash when it comes to military adventurism.
A lot of callers want to join our roundtable today, and I'd like to go first to Jacqueline, who is in Melrose, Massachusetts. Hi, Jacqueline. You're on the line.
Hi. I feel that there's no more personal matter than bathroom activities, toilet activities, and sexual activities. And I think it's an obscenity that the media are focusing so brutally on this poor man. I'm so sorry for his family and for him. And he seems not to be able to help himself. The greater obscenity is the neglect of New Orleans for 2 years. And, of course, the neglect initially, that nothing was done about it, and as people were dying. And then for weeks and weeks, weeks afterwards, children walked by dead bodies on the ground there. That's obscenity. And the greatest obscenity of all, Jane, is what's happened again, our eighth war since World War II, when our Republican president, Eisenhower, said we must have no more wars. He talked about the brutality of war and the stupidity and futility of war. And there's no more brutality than we can see in the young people you're going to be talking about in the next hour, losing arms and legs, having their arms and body parts torn off them in the horror of war.
Jacqueline, thank you so much for your thoughts. Too much focus, Jacqueline thinks, on Senator Craig. Jack Beatty, your comments, your thoughts?
Well, I agree with her about Senator Craig. This is a story that's going to be over very shortly, perhaps even today, as we heard from Liz. And, you know, I mean, it isn't just Senator Craig. There are other investigations out there. Senator Ted Stevens of Arkansas and Representative Don Young of Arkansas, they're under investigation for ties to an oil company. Representative Tom Feeney of Florida, John Doolittle of California, they're the focus of reinvigorated Abramoff investigations. Rick Renzi, Republican of Arizona, he just had his house raided. He's resigning. He's not going to run again. The FBI is investigating someone else, Representative Gary Miller of California, and there are ethics investigations in the House and the Senate and House, respectively, possibly against Senator Pete Domenici and Heather Wilson of New Mexico for their part in the David Iglesias firing or possible firing. So there are lots of other investigations out there that involve more substantive matters than merely sexual peccadillo.
Back to Mark now, who's on the phone from Chicopee, Massachusetts. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Hi, I have to echo the other caller, and I was kind of surprised that on your show you began with the whole incident with Craig. I am really tired of the transcripts of the bathroom activity and things like this. I heard a short story that there was campaign contributions given back from a fugitive. But I didn't hear any details on it.
Let's talk about that. Good point, Mark. Thanks for bringing it up. At a press conference on Thursday, Senator Hillary Clinton tried to explain how she accepted donations, campaign donations, from a man named Norman Sue, who was facing an arrest warrant for fraud.
When you have as many contributors as I'm fortunate enough to have, we do the very best job we can based on the information available to us to make appropriate vetting decisions. And this one was a big surprise to everybody.
The Clinton campaign said it would give back thousands of dollars or give away thousands of dollars that it received from this man. And the campaign said it will increase its vigilance when it comes to donors. David Yepsen, your response to this? You can't keep track of all your donors, I guess.
Well, no, that's correct. And I think that we have a front page story in our paper today. Iowa Democratic politicians are giving back some of their money that they received from him. I mean, they do raise a lot of money. There's a lot of different people who give money. And it's just impossible for a campaign to keep track of it all. I don't sense there's anything that nefarious going on here. I mean, and I disagree with the caller to this extent. I think this has been a growing story. It was in the front page of the New York Times yesterday, and I think news organizations have paid attention to this and may for a few more days. But the fact is, we reporters, I don't think, can ignore Senator Craig's situation. I mean, news is what is new and different and out of the ordinary. I mean, it isn't every day the United States senator gets arrested in a bathroom for lewd behavior. And a story that may, in fact, knock him out of the U.S. Senate. To me, this is a big story and an important story, and I don't think it's just journalistic voyeurism.
I'd like to turn for a moment to the Virginia Tech statewide panel, which investigated the mass shooting at the university there, criticized the university for not notifying students and staff more rapidly and for failing to respond to the signs of mental health issues in the shooter. Liz Mayer, what lessons do this report teach us?
I think one of the lessons that's got to come out of it is that perhaps when you're looking at people who may have mental health problems, authorities need to be a little bit looser in their interpretation of privacy laws. One of the things that I noticed this morning in one of the write-ups about this story was that, you know, there were plenty of opportunities for the authorities to be notified that this guy apparently was verging towards being a major problem and veering towards the kind of activity that he, you know, ultimately engaged in that caused mm-hmm. numerous deaths. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the reason that those reports were not made was specifically out of concerns about regarding his privacy. And, you know, while we all want to be conscious of people's privacy and not go blasting about everybody's medical records, when somebody is basically threatening to commit murders and kill himself, you know, I think that's one of those situations where authorities probably need to be a little bit looser in their interpretation of laws relating to that kind of thing.
David Yepsen, your governor is a graduate of Virginia Tech. What are people in Iowa saying?
Well, we have a debate in this state over whether or not campus security officers should carry firearms. They mm-hmm. don't mm-hmm. now, and there's some discussion that maybe they should. I think this prompts every academic institution to reexamine its priorities. I imagine this report is going to be well read throughout the academic community by people who are saying, what are we doing? How do we do things differently? But we live in an era of where constantly our privacy rights are getting encroached upon in the interest of greater security. And I think this will just incrementally continue that chipping away, if you will.
Mary is in Florence, South Carolina. Hi, Mary. You're on the line.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call this
sure.
morning. I would like to know if, from Jack Beatty, what he thinks about the pictures that I've seen on the news of Maliki walking with Ahmadinejad from Iran, holding hands, and now he's making the statement to Americans that he has other friends over there that will help him.
All right, Mary, thanks so much. Let's turn it to Jack about a minute before our break. Jack?
Well, he's playing that card, and he's made similar statements about the Syrian government. After all, our intervention has brought to power an Iran-friendly regime in Iraq. That is a historic reversal. Our policy, we held our nose and supported Saddam for years precisely to contain Iran. Now we have essentially done what the Iranians wanted us to do, and we can't get away from that. And this is Iran's neighborhood, and naturally he's going to be friendly with them. And of course, on the other side, our people are claiming that the Iranians are killing U.S. servicemen. They're sending in weapons. We still don't know about that. I think that he's playing that card and saying you're going to criticize me and talk as Bush had and as the Democratic a couple of Democrats had. I'm going to talk with my friends, and so there he is, and it's perfectly understandable, it seems to me, and it must be a source of great vexation in the White House.
A lot of different headlines in the news this week. Quarterback Michael Vick's guilty plea on dogfighting charges on Monday was followed by this moment of contrition.
I want to apologize to all the young kids out there for my immature acts, and what I did was. What I did was very immature, so that means I need to grow up.
Forest and farmland aflame in Greece this week. Arrests and citizen anger followed.
All the olives are destroyed. We have our oil, we have our oranges, and now it's nothing, nothing, nothing.
And Richard Jewell, who was accused and then cleared in the Atlanta bombings, Olympic bombings, died this week of natural causes.
I dare say there's more people that know that I was accused of it and was a suspect or called a suspect than know I was the one that actually found the package and that I was cleared.
My guests this hour are David Yepsen, chief political correspondent for the Des Moines Register, Liz Mayer, a political blogger and columnist for the New York Sun, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly magazine. Back to politics, presidential politics for a moment. Hillary Clinton showed her lighter side last night on the David Letterman program, delivering her top 10 campaign promises for, in her words, when she becomes president. We pick it up with number 4.
You know, for over a century, there have been only 2 Dakotas. I plan to double that.
Whoa! 4 Dakotas.
Number 3. We will finally have a president who doesn't mind pulling over and asking for directions. Am I right, ladies? Number 2, I will appoint a committee to find out what the heck is happening on Lost.
Yeah, it's about time. That'll shut it down.
Number 1, One more pantsuit joke and Letterman disappears.
Yeah.
That's Hillary Clinton on the Democratic side. For the Republicans this week, Senator Fred Thompson has announced that he will announce that he's entering the race for president. How significant is on this on the Republican side, David Yepsen?
Well, there's a great yearning in the Republican Party for the next Ronald Reagan, for somebody to lead them out of this mess that they're in, to lead them out of the damage of 2006, to lead them to victory in 2008. ABC Washington Post did an interesting poll out here earlier this month in which they found that something like 60% of Democratic caucus goers liked their choices, but only 19% of Republican caucus goers liked their choices for president. So there is a real demand for Fred Thompson. He moves into second place or third place in many of these polls, both here in Iowa and nationally, just by by talking about running. Now, having said that, there is a real those of us who watch this game are asking this question: is he going to live up to all these expectations?
Mm-hmm.
They're very high for him. He's had a rough early start. There's this protracted I'm going to announce.
Mm-hmm.
There's been difficulties inside his campaign. And he could very well be one of these politicians who peaks on the day he announces. I'm thinking of presidential candidates like John Connolly, John Glenn, who were just going to be the savior of their party.
Mm-hmm.
And they just slid from the day they got in the race.
Liz Mayer, what do you think? Do you agree with David Yepsen that Fred Thompson might peak on the day he announces? His fundraising efforts have certainly been lower than expected.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, his fundraising has been lower than expected. I think there has been a huge amount of anticipation about, his announcement. And, one of the things that he has benefited from in the period that he has been sort of in the mix but not formally is a real lack of scrutiny over his record and his dealings. I mean, there's been some talk about, the work that he did when he was a lobbyist that apparently involved an abortion rights group, which is probably the kind of thing that's going to anger pro-lifers. But, beyond that, we really haven't seen a whole lot of it. And I think, now that he is going to enter this race formally, I think that you're going to see a lot of that increased. And honestly, on my reading of his record, it's conservative, but it's certainly not without flaws. And I think that people are going to be very quick to pick those out.
Mm-hmm. Back to the phones now. More calls, more listeners from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. This time, Randy is on the line. Hi, Randy. Go ahead.
Hi, I have a question for Mr. Yepsen.
Yes.
And it regards Joe Biden's candidacy here in Iowa and nationwide. I was at a reading he did here in Barnes & Noble on Wednesday evening, and I was surprised at the turnout. It was much larger than I expected, and people were very receptive to what he had to say, and I was impressed by his knowledge, his experience in foreign policy. I asked him a question about Musharraf in Pakistan, and he said that he would send a paper to me that he just recently wrote about Pakistan.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it was very impressive.
So Randy's question to you, David Yepsen, is perhaps what are Joe Biden's chances?
I think Randy explains and has just told us about something I mentioned earlier, and that is that there's a lot of upside potential to Joe Biden. I mean, he ran in the state before, in 1988, before he was knocked out of the race, and one of the reasons that whole episode back in 88 where he was accused of plagiarizing a Neil Kinnock speech was because the Michael Dukakis campaign that year saw Biden, in fact, rising in this state. So I think Senator Biden has got a lot of credibility with activist Democrats on the single most important issue in this campaign, and that's Iraq and national security. And as the Democrats look for an answer, look for someone who can lead them and this country out of this mess, Joe Biden has got some portfolio to talk about this stuff, and they do listen, and they do show up. And, here's another example. A candidate who's at 1% in the polls shows up to read from his book, and he gets a huge crowd. This happens all over this state of Democrats showing up to campaign, and they get really fantastic turnouts.
Mm. Another call now from Iowa, this time Iowa City, and Rita, who's on the line. Hi, Rita. Go ahead.
Hey, great to be talking with you. I really appreciate the wonderful commentary that you all provide. But I did want to make the comment that it so often the political commentators present this as a done deal. Not one precinct has decided anything, and yet frequently you all just go with whoever is leading in the polls at a given snapshot in time.
All right, Rita, thank you. Liz Mayer, I'll turn to you. Snap judgments on the behalf of the media when it comes to politics, especially presidential politics?
Yeah, I think to a certain degree that's true. And I think on the Democratic side at the moment, we're seeing a lot of that insofar as, you know, in most polls, certainly most nationwide polls, Hillary Clinton is leading by a very sizable margin. Now, I mean, in Iowa, that's not true. There are several polls going out saying that, you know, she and Edwards and Obama are all sort of, you know, within a couple of points of each other. But I think by and large, when you're looking at the Democratic field, I think that there is an assumption at this point that she is going to be the nominee, and I think that that is reflected in the media. On the Republican side, I think that's less the case. There are a lot of different opinions about whether we're looking likely to nominate Giuliani, whether we're looking to Romney, what Fred Thompson entering this race is going to do. So I think for as much as that may have appeared to be set to date, I think certainly with Thompson getting into the race, there's going to be a lot more fluctuation there.
Let me turn back to a question about the war in Iraq, because this week President Bush announced he's planning to ask Congress for $50 billion in additional funding for the war in Iraq. Does this mean the White House is confident, David Yepsen, that it can fend off congressional calls for a drawdown of U.S. forces in Iraq?
Well, Democrats are in a bind here. I mean, they want to get out fast. The activists in their party want to get out fast. But when it comes right down to actually having Congress do something like that, it's very difficult without risking the charge that they're weak on defense or that they're jeopardizing our troops. And so I think the White House is probably assuming they can play that card again and get Democrats to go along. I don't know. I mean, I hear from activist Democrats who are really fed up with the Democratic Congress over this. And so I imagine there'll be another good argument about this.
The Bush administration also announced actually today that it's going to set up policies meant to help ease the wave of mortgage defaults. And this is the administration's first real broad effort to deal with these rising number of home foreclosures, which are widely forecast to increase in the next year. Jack Beatty, this is a helpful step, an important step along this path?
Well, we'll have to see. I don't know the details of it, and anything that would help the estimated 2 million people who are going to be foreclosed hold on to their property, I think would be a good thing. But, you know, this is the background, really, I think, of the 2008 campaign. Iraq is in our foreground now, but economics decides American presidential elections. And we're going to have a down, perhaps even a national dip in prices for houses. We're certainly going to have foreclosures. And a census report this week reveals that the median household income last year, this after nearly 5 years of recovery, was still $1,000 less than it was in 2000. And while the poverty rate had clicked down a fleck or two, the number of people without insurance and medical insurance had gone up. And these economic issues now, not to the fore, I think will be more and more salient as the campaign develops.
Jack, thanks. Back to the phones now. In Wareham, Massachusetts, Sandy is on the line. Hi. Welcome, Sandy.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I love your show. I would like to ask the reporters and commentators a question. I have long wondered, and I agree with many people, that we need to have, someone needs to have a long-term presence in Iraq. Clearly, there's a cultural divide between the Shiites and the Sunnis and even the northern Kurdish group.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering why we don't work harder to get Iran to support the Shia, Saudi Arabia and Syria to support the Sunnis, and Turkey to support the Kurdish. Now, that may be a naive division there, but certainly some permutation might be workable, because I don't think the Iraqis really want us to be there. Think of it this way. If we were in a similar situation, would we prefer to have the Brits occupy us or Saudis?
Sandy, thanks so much. Actually, Jack Beatty, let me turn to you on that one. Some sort of movement toward negotiation among all these parties in the Middle East?
Well, it's to be desired, but, you know, what a caller says about them not wanting us here, I mean, the Iraqi parliament passed a non-binding resolution basically saying that they wanted us to leave. However, there's already been, people argue, intervention, and it's not been helpful, that the intervention, rather than being in the form of, you know, Iraq and Iran and Saudi, say, making some sort of agreement, it's been the Saudis arming one side and the Iranians arming another, and now we find out in the north that this big scandal about the U.S. arms shipments in 2004 and 5, which just went missing, massive quantities of weapons. Now we find that they've leaked over the border some of these weapons to the guerrillas in Turkey, and the Turks are very upset about this, and this is another spillover of this great disaster of Iraq. So I don't think we don't really see this people getting together and talking about how they can step back from this crisis. Instead, we see clandestine intervention on the part of these powers.
And staying in the region, in Pakistan, this week President Musharraf agreed to resign as army chief, which would allow him to serve another term as president and allow exiled former Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto to return to Pakistan and to run for prime minister. Liz Mayer, what does this say about politics and political stability in Pakistan and beyond?
Well, I think it suggests that, you know, as far as Musharraf is concerned, he clearly thinks that the situation is stabilizing some. I mean, I'm personally not convinced that Benazir Bhutto going back there is necessarily going to help that situation carry on. But it appears that he's convinced that he's in a position to relinquish, I guess, a little bit of control that he's got and open things up somewhat.
David Yepsen, interesting ruling in Iowa this week on another matter. District court judge struck down Iowa's law banning gay marriage, saying it is unconstitutional. What kind of reaction is that getting in Iowa?
Well, it's throw a little shot of gasoline on the emotional fires of Iowa politics.
Mm-hmm.
Wherever
mm-hmm.
this issue comes up, a court rules that the equal protection of the Constitution says you can't treat gays and lesbians differently than heterosexuals when it comes to handing out marriage licenses, and you have a huge political issue. And there's just a lot of debate in the state today, as there has been all over the country where this has come up. And I think Republicans are planning to use this issue in the 2008 election to whip up their base of supporters. There will be an effort now in this state to adopt a constitutional amendment to overturn the ruling, and eventually that will have to be voted on by the voters of Iowa, but it will become a debate in our legislature. And I mean, this is a pattern that we've seen all over the country, that the Republicans will use this issue to gin up their social conservative supporters. And as we've talked about earlier, you know, the base of the Republican Party is kind of down.
Mm-hmm.
And so this may be, in fact, the sort of thing that will energize them and get them out to the polls on Election Day.
Last couple of minutes in this program, this hour, moving out of these slow summer months, although it's been a lot of news this week, actually. But big story, you think, coming up in the fall, in the months to come. Liz Mayer, you first, then David.
Ooh, big story coming up in the months to come. That's a tough one to say, actually. I think I'm going to let David weigh in on this first, since frankly, the state that he's in actually is going to be, in terms of the presidential stuff, they're going to be going far before where I'm at.
Yeah.
So.
Is it politics, David, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, where I sit, this whole story of these states constantly jockeying their position, we touched on it earlier in this nomination contest, it has had the unintended consequence of just making Iowa and New Hampshire that much more important. Candidates have to do well here if they have any hope at all of winning a nomination. And so my life 24/7 is spent dealing with a presidential campaign for the next few months.
Well, we've appreciated very much your perspectives and your insights today. David Yepsen, joining us from Des Moines, Iowa, chief political correspondent for the Des Moines Register. Thanks so much for your time, David.
Thank you.
And joining us from Washington is political blogger and columnist for the New York Sun, Liz Mayer. Liz, great to have you with us.
Thank you so much, Jane.
And as always, from Hanover, New Hampshire, Jack Beatty, On Point news analyst and senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Jack, thanks so much.
Thank you, Jane.
I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.